Welcome to Life Sciences and Science Life, a science podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional and Sports Sciences.
Our team of PhD candidates, along with various experts in the field, talk about current advances in sciences while exploring the challenges and triumphs of PhD life.
Today we are sitting down with Dr. Fang Xian, a postdoctoral scholar at the Department of Pharmaceutical Sciences. We will talk about proteomics and its role in life sciences. Hello and welcome, Fang.
Hello, everyone.
So, Fang, thanks for joining us today. And let's start with the simple question of why do we need to go beyond genome to understand a cell, to understand biology?
Okay. So as you know, like the human genome project has finished like 20 years ago. So after the human proteome, human genome project, we know like from the genomic information, it tells us what can happen theoretically. But the proteome or anything post the genome methods can actually show us what is actually happening at that moment. And as you probably know that, many of you know that, proteins are the functional molecules that work in cells. They drive the metabolism, signaling in even immunity. By looking beyond the genome and specifically measuring proteins directly, we can capture the real-time function of the biological activities.
Then how does the proteomics complement with genomics, transcriptomics, and metabolomics to provide a functional readout of the biology or life?
In my opinion, genomics, even transcriptomics, they both set the stage for something to perform. And that something is protein. I think that should be the best description of how proteome works.
So from your words, I understand that proteomics is everything. Like they govern most of the functions and you know, they do the reactions, the things that keep us alive, and then that keeps the organism moving. So I assume proteins are very dynamic in nature. So how do you study these proteins, these dynamic proteins? What tools do you have to study?
Throughout the life science advancement, I mean, previously we use a lot of, analytical tools, for example, like a Western blot target, which look at specific proteins like targetly. But nowadays we have everything is going to a larger scale. So we also have larger scale proteomics mostly based on the mass spectrometer. Mm-hmm. And mass spectrometer is the device or instrument that, let's call it, measuring the weight of molecules, in this case, proteins. So you can imagine it's just a very fancy or very sensitive scale, kitchen scale, that could measure the molecular weight of proteins.
Very interesting. Could you tell us more about the breakthroughs in this technology of using mass spectrometry, how deep it can cover the proteome, and what are the latest developments? Do you have something?
From the liquid chromatography side, the modern device, modern LC device, allows us to be more accurate to take the analytes, and also to go high throughput, which is very important in large scale studies, especially involved in clinical samples, often including like hundreds, even thousands of samples. from the, let's say, from the mass spec side, the breakthrough is like every year. Every year, there's a new device coming up. Currently, for example, in our lab, we have the state-of-the-art mass spec coupled with ion mobility, which add the different dimension in measuring peptides or proteins. So traditionally, we know through the LC-MS, we know the retention time on separation, and we know the molecular weight measured by the mass spec, as well as the mass spec will measures the signal, the intensity of this molecular. And now with the additional dimension, that is ion mobility, that could provide additional separation based on the structure of the molecular. For example, the big based on the size, basically. If the molecular is larger, then it will be eluted in a way, like a slower than the lighter molecules. And this will provide us like the different resolution. So with those advancements, we can really go deep into the proteome. I can give you, let's say, two examples, like which are the current hot topics in proteomics. For example, nowadays we can do single cell proteomics. That means measure protein content in one cell. And as you know, like for human genome, we have over 20,000 genes. So theoretically, we should have, but at the protein level, this number really accelerates, I would say. Because of the isoforms, because of modifications, so, and also the post-transcription editing as well. So, but even though in the single cell proteomic, by measuring the content, we can profile up to, let's say, 7,000 proteins. Oh. So that is a truly, I would say, advancement. And the second example I would give is related to gut microbiome. So in our gut environment, there are so many species, So unlike the traditional proteomic study, we only look at one species or one tissue type from something from. But with the microbiome samples, we are looking at hundreds of species, and most of them are really, really low abundant ones. But with the current state of the art instrumentations, we can really do that. So, yeah.
Wow, very interesting. So, Fang, tell us about your current research.
For more than 10 years, I was doing tissue or cell proteomics. But recently, our lab started let's call it a new hot topic, that is metaproteomics. We are very much interested to develop new analytical tools, pipelines, basically to understand how the host and the microbes, they interact in our gut environment. Recently we have one Nature Communication paper published, and there we applied an ultra-sensitive metaproteomics workflow to uncover hidden functions in the gut environment. And specifically, we also applied this workflow in a colon injury model. It is an inflammatory bowel disease-like pathology. And from there, we uncovered functions that, for example, genomics cannot capture.
That's fascinating, Fang. It's interdisciplinary, right? Research is always interdisciplinary. So apart from pharma, in nutrition science research, what can proteomics tell us about the impacts of diet and our everyday lifestyle on health? What do you think about this?
Proteomics literally can be applied in any, let's say, life science domain. For example, in specifically to nutritional research, proteomics can help to reveal how high fat or diet versus plant-based diets, and these it can reveal the reprogramming of metabolic enzymes in the liver, and also how exercise remodels the muscle proteins that control energy use. And of course, in the gut microbiome, it's all very relevant. So it can also tell us how gut microbes, bacteria, virus, and other kingdoms, they produce different enzymes depending on what we eat. So in other words, proteomics, I think it captures the real-time molecular fingerprint of the nutrition and the lifestyle of our human health. Another example would also be of interest, that is in allergy studies, for example, food allergies, mm-hmm. right? Proteomics can directly identify and quantify the proteins that triggers the allergic reactions, mm-hmm. right? A lot of those allergens are actually protein, like coming from peanuts, milk, yeah. So by measuring these, I think we can understand the allergen reaction better.
So it's very interesting that proteomics can do so many things beyond just cataloging proteins. You can understand the pathways, understand how the disease progression happens and everything. But could you throw us some light on how the samples are prepared and how how much time it takes to analyze the samples?
Yes, yeah. Of course. So the general workflow, just imagine you get a tissue biopsy or a cell culture. The first step is always to lyse the samples to extract the as much protein as possible from your raw biological material. And this lysis step normally involve using different detergents depending on your which fraction of the protein you are interested. And then when you get the protein extracts, it often involves a digestion step, meaning to cut the protein molecular into small fragments, we call it peptides, yeah. right? And from after getting the peptide, we move it for the LC-MS analysis. Mm-hmm. That's where we call it proteomics. Nowadays, as I mentioned earlier, the technology is developing so fast, we can run really fast analysis from minutes. And like typically in our lab, we're using 30 minutes or 60 minutes analysis time. And this will give us actually very enough depth in the profiling. Enough depth here, I can give you a number. So typically from a mouse or human tissue within for 6 minutes of analysis time, we can get somewhere near 10,000 proteins. Mm-hmm. That's almost half of the genome, let's say. And of course, this is only to generate the data. Then of course it's the data analysis and the interpretations, right? And yeah.
Blood, tissue, fecus seems highly complex. How do you handle this complexity in the proteomics?
Yes, there are a lot of biological samples are full of complexity. As you mentioned, blood, feces. So they often contain thousands, even close to millions of proteins across a huge dynamic range. So they are high abundant. For example, in the blood sample, you have very abundant IgG. But meanwhile, you also can discover very low abundant proteins, like even transcription factors. And proteomics workflow handled this with, I think there are some tricks. For example, if you really want to go deep, like to see every possible protein that is presented, you can perform like a fractionation, meaning like based on the physiochemical properties of the peptides or of the protein, you can fractionate those samples into different fractions and then measure them individually. And of course, there are also, let's say, LC-MS method dependent. So there will be more sensitive method than the others. And nowadays we are using, largely using data independent acquisition, which doesn't require any prior knowledge of your sample. So this substantially increase the profiling depth as well as the sensitivity. And the last step for the data analysis as well. So when you analyze a complex sample, of course, you also get a very complex data. The current software development also allow us to look at the data differently. And basically, we can extract more confident information in our data sets.
So Fang, it was so interesting. You put a lot of things in a table, and it's quite a complex one, I would say. So I want to see that where this goes to in future, like where do you see the proteomics having the biggest impact over in next 5 or 10 years?
Wow, that's a lot of time that what I think one can imagine. But in my view, over the next 5 to 10 years, I believe proteomics can make the biggest impact maybe in, I don't know, in 2 or 3 fields. The first one coming into my mind would be the precision medicine. So meaning proteomics can guide the treatment choice by showing how patient's protein respond to the therapy or to the medication. The second proteomics can surely contribute is to provide evidence for early diagnosis. So using protein biomarkers, either from like blood, biopsy, tissue biopsy, or even gut microbiome samples, we can provide insights on the biomarkers that can potentially be used for clinical practice. Maybe the last one, in specifically for nutritional and also for the sports science audience, I think the diet, it's very important, and the proteomics can definitely contribute to that on our lifestyle choice. And also, I think it can be extended to the general sport field, for example, to detect like anti-doping usage, like those stuff. Because normally the athletes, they take, not necessarily taking proteins, they take a compound that could enhance their performance. But this compound has the, let's say, the half-life time, and then you cannot detect this compound anymore. But probably at the proteome level, at the protein level, your body still maintains this, let's say, maintain a different proteome response before you take those enhancements.
It sounds very interesting. Do you think proteomics could one day become a routine in clinical practices?
I would very much like that to happen. I think it will happen. Because the current, like I said, with all the technical advancement and for proteomics, first, we don't need that much of biological material. So meaning we are very sensitive. And from the analysis time, we can be very short. The most important part would be the cost, I would say. But recently, a research group in the United States, they actually proposed the idea of a $10 proteome. So where they calculate the cost for the instrument, for the reagents, for data analysis, all those stuff, and we can really achieve then $10 proteome in the long run, of course, because the most expensive part is still the instrumentation, right?
So Fang, you give so much insights, and you are in so much, we are in so much awe for proteomics. So does this mean that genomics is dead? Like we don't do genomics anymore, and proteomics has taken over the field, and proteomics can answer? Because in case of the metaproteomics, you mentioned that we could also identify the type of microorganisms at the level of species using proteomics. So this means there's no need to do genomics, right? Because genomics says just who's there, but proteomics is saying what they are doing. So what is your take on genomics versus proteomics?
So of course, as a researcher in proteomics, I would defend my field. but no, genomics is not dead. Still, there are so many things at the genome level like we don't know, even after we have the human genome project finished, let's say 20 years after. For example, there are still so many diseases are relying on the genomic detection. Especially in the cancer studies. So probably as you know, there are a lot of cancer mutations that, how to say, they characterize the cancer patients, even it's the same cancer type, but they characterize them based on the genomic mutation. So that is the mutation, the proteome we cannot detect.
Okay.
Yeah. And another thing is proteomic still largely relying on the genomic, I have to say. It's I wouldn't say it's one replacing another, but it's like a complementing another. So, for example, even until nowadays, we cannot measure the whole genome, meaning like we cannot have 20, let's say over 20,000 proteins identified in any proteomic data set. This can be abundance related. It can be, let's say, some genes are really specific, are specifically expressed under certain conditions. And those ones we cannot detect by proteome.
Okay. Very interesting.
Great. Thanks for sharing a very, very quite complex thing into a simple words. What is your advice on the researchers or other students that want to go to the proteomics? What's your advice?
First, I would say, like any other field, you have to design your experiment carefully. It's not like proteomics is the tool to solve to provide magic. Second, I would say, as it is a larger scale study, larger scale meaning you are dealing with tremendous amount of data. And so from the data analysis point of view, it would be beneficial if you have some knowledge in any computational language like R, Python, those stuff. Because it really helps you to dive into the data structure.
Thank you for joining us today. It was nice talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this episode of Life Sciences and Science Life. We are your hosts, Ranjit and
Hari.
Tune in next month for more intriguing science topics, relatable PhD experiences, and expert contributions on how to navigate a career path of a young scientist.
This is a podcast of the University of Vienna's Doctoral School of Pharmaceutical, Nutritional, and Sports Sciences. Don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn. Thank you for listening. See you next time.